welcome back to another exciting show. Welcome, everybody, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, live from New Zealand, live from the future. It is already tomorrow. We're going to bring you some breaking news now. It's apparently just come over the... What's it called? The Pearl Harbor weekend? Do you have something like that? My very special guest today is called Douglas Dietrich, coming at us live from the fabulously Fukushima irradiated coastline of California with the extra fabulous information. Straight from the DOD is the librarian mofo with the info that you would never even believe even fracking existed, buried deep within the moldy, musty archives of the Department of Defense of the United States, bringing it out all year to you today. He speaks faster than a 50-caliber machine gun shoots, and he does just as much damage as a nuclear warhead to your poor, juicy mind chasm brain places. Douglas Dietrich, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Mr. Eastwood. I was complaining earlier that I couldn't see Mr. Eastwood's image on the camera. That has since been fixed, and I've regretted it ever since. But I'm certainly glad that he's rocking and grooving, and we're ready to do that ourselves as we get into the conversation. So, Mr. Eastwood, I want to thank you for bringing up the NATO support of Syrian rebels, and we'll fix that into our theme for today, which will be what I would call the Greater Pacific War Memorial Weekend, based on Pearl Harbor Memorial Day itself, which was Friday here in east of the ID line, east of the international date line. And west of the international date line, of course, Pearl Harbor Attack Day in Japan was always noted as December 8th. And December 8th, because 8 is a lucky number in Asia, was considered an auspicious day for an attack. And in a sense, it was auspicious for the Japanese because they realized that they were in the middle of an attempted ambush and pulled out. So we could go a bit into the dynamics of the operational matrix regarding that and how that impacted the war tremendously. But I really, as always, Mr. Eastwood, count on yourself for adult supervision and count on you to kind of get the conversation started. Do you have any impression about the North Atlantic Treaty Organization's support of Syrian rebels? And to tell you the truth, I don't believe New Zealand is a member of NATO, nor is Australia.
Not true. About 10 weeks ago, I think, the Prime Minister, John Key, visited NATO HQ and signed us up to it. And he just came back and then reported it. Hey, we're all signed up to NATO now. You're like, hold on a second. Aren't we in the South Pacific? Part of the South Pacific is in the North Atlantic Treaty Organization? What? It just seems like the NATO is simply the world army, right? They want a world army, they want a world government, a world regulatory commission, world trade organizations, world bank, world this, world that. And essentially NATO, I believe, personally, this is just a wild speculation on my part, is attempting to sign up as many countries as they can so that if any country at any time resists the world government, all the countries will be on your doorstep shooting you. It'll be irresistible.
Well, that used to be the function of the United Nations, but I guess the United Nations just hasn't filled that role to any satisfaction because of the conflicts in command and the conflicts in cultures. And the North Atlantic Treaty Organization is much more of a Eurocentric organization, and perhaps because of that, there's less of a conflict of the member nation states. It's a supranational organization, but nevertheless, everyone is kind of products of the same kind of cultural matrix originally. At least. And because of that, they're probably hoping for a much more, shall I say, just coordinated, combined actions kind of, shall we say, results from it. But I think that they'll be sorely disappointed. We're all going to head towards a kind of devolution in balkanization and breakup of many nation states. And the North Atlantic Treaty Organization is not going to be able to stop that. But I definitely am glad that you informed me of that. That is shocking about what happened with New Zealand. There was, of course, no participation from your parliamentary democracy in that decision. That seems almost unilateral.
Prime Minister himself goes over and then just signs us up to it. You know, the rest of the country's like, what?
Yeah, and that reminds me
and
of
still,
the...
Most people don't even know this, even. It wasn't announced. It was announced in the mainstream media, at least in the newspapers, so I saw, but I didn't see anything in the 6 o'clock news or morning discussion programs or things like that. It was just strange.
No, it was very strange, and I'm still reeling from shock at what you've just shared with me, and the end result is, first of all, it reminds me of the old colonial empire days where New Zealand was essentially just answering the call from the Crown to go out and send Anzac's troops along with the Australians to North Africa or to India or wherever they were dispatched, based on unilateral commands from London. Now you're simply getting them from Brussels, Belgium. That means that if NATO participates in various police actions, then New Zealander troops and Maoris may find themselves overseas in the Balkans. As a matter of fact, I remember the Bosnian conflict. There were Maori tribesmen who were present along with some New Zealander troops, but it was part of the United Nations. I don't know if you remember that.
So, yeah, the pronunciation is like Chairman Maori, like Maori.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for correcting me on that. And, yeah. But do you remember any? Yeah. Do you remember any of that in the Balkans, or are you too young?
I was talking to a couple of Maori elders about this very concept the other day. And you think about back to, say, even as far back as World War One and Gallipoli, Māori and other New Zealand soldiers have been teaming up with their British masters essentially to go off and fight and die and what have you. And the people who wind up getting all the money from all the weapon sales and all the debt that the governments get themselves in seems to be the Bank of England.
Yeah. Lovely. That's so inspirational. Thank you. I just want to. It's a right piece of jingoistic time for us all. So, in terms of the Pearl Harbor Memorial Day itself, which was on Friday, December 7th, we're into the Greater Pacific War Memorial Day weekend, as I would call it here in the United States. But what you brought up about Syria does bring a kind of tangent in history that is often not recognized. Basically, Syria was hated by the United States for the longest period of time, just as Egypt was, because both Egypt and Syria, unknown to most Westerners, were once one nation for a very long period of time in the 1950s. As a matter of fact, from 1958 to 1971, both Syria and Egypt were one single United Arab Republic. And as a matter of fact, both of them had the exact same flag. The only difference was that the Egyptian flag had the eagle standard inside of it, very similar to the Iraqis at times, depending on which flag you were looking at. At other times, it would have the two stars. Both of these signified the fact that the Arab republics of Syria and Egypt were essentially united under one administration, which was that of Gamal Abdel Nasser. And Gamal Abdel Nasser was able to maintain a very precarious balancing act between the Soviet Union and the United States. He was a man who accumulated his own nuclear arsenal. He had what was known as Factory 333, and Factory 333 was built. It was constructed in the ancient ruins of Heliopolis outside of Cairo, and there were well over 400 Nazi scientists that were there. As a matter of fact, maybe 500,000 of them. Rocket technicians. The man in charge of the project, as a matter of fact, was Dr. Jürgen Sanger, who was the father of glide boost rocketry. So not only did they accumulate nuclear warheads, they had the ability to launch them intercontinentally. This made him a power in and of himself of such a threat based on the way that he was going to deploy those missiles that the United States, during the period of the nationalization of the Suez Canal, actually sided on the side of Gamal Abdel Nasser against the Israelis, the French, and the British. And the Soviets switched sides during that period of time. As a matter of fact, the Soviets were initially on the side of the Egyptians. They went on the side of the Israelis. And that meant it was the United States and Egypt that were essentially against the world, as opposed to the United States and Israel at that point in time. Now, that was a very, very close call, far, far more dangerous than the Cuban Missile Crisis. At the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis, the Soviet Union only had about 4 operational ICBMs, quite literally. So any danger of it turning into a nuclear, global, all-out escalation of war is myth. But during the time of the Egyptian confrontation over the nationalization of the Suez Canal, Gamal Abdel Nasser forced an American break with all of its allies and a collapse of the alliance. And the allies, like the British, had a far greater nuclear delivery capacity than the Soviets did. So if it really came to an all-out global conflict with Israel, France, and Britain, and the Soviet Union against the United States and Egypt at that time, we were talking about something that was much more similar to a global nuclear conflict. And it almost came to that point. And the United States never forgave Gamal Abdel Nasser for pushing them into that position. It ultimately destabilized quite recently the Egyptian administration, and it destabilized the Syrian administration consequent to that. So the connections between Egypt and Syria are still very strong. Those same flags are still maintained that they had when they were a United Arab Republic. And now that the former constituents of that United Arab Republic are being dismantled in a long-term case of American vindictiveness. Now, it's important to remember, Gamal Abdel Nasser was such a threat because he was very secular. He was able to straddle the three worlds of pan-Arabism, pan-Africanism, and pan-Islam, while at the same time maintaining a very secular Kemalist perspective, like Kemal Atatürk of modern Turkey. He was not someone who was going to basically fall back or retroactively reverse a speed into a kind of Islamic fundamentalism. And so Egypt has always maintained a very secular government. Now, all of these radicalized Islamic governments that are taking the place of the fall of the very communist and very secular Muammar Gaddafi, the fall of the Egyptian monarchy and the fall of the present Syrian government are leading to fundamentalist insurgencies that are backed by the House of Saud. And the House of Saud is very much in control of U.S. foreign policy and has been ever since Pearl Harbor, almost as a direct result of Pearl Harbor. And that's why all of this history is very connected in terms of the House of Saud. People tend to have various conspiracy theories where many people who are anti-Semitic will bring up the concept of a Zionist occupation government, and they tend to look at America as this kind of Jewish-controlled nation. There are other conspiracy theorists who bring up, instead of a Zog or a Zionist occupation government, these days the concept of America as a Fourth Reich or a Nazi occupation government, saying that, oh, all of this started with Operation Paperclip, all the rest of that.
That's BS for a start. Who gave Adolf Hitler $1 trillion to build up the German industry in the 30s? The United States.
Well, there was a lot of investment. There was a lot of investment. Business is business, and I'm not defending it, but I'm outlining there was a neutrality to the economics of it. That
Hitler was fracking Times Man of the Year.
Yes, actually, several times. If I'm not, there was more than once.
He was the darling of the West.
Yeah, more so than President Roosevelt, as a matter of fact. Adolf Hitler was the Time Man of the Year. That's quite correct. He was indeed the darling of the West because he was able to launch an economic reformation and renaissance the likes of which the world had never seen. And because of that, he was considered a safe investment. But this does not necessarily translate to political power, especially in the aftermath of general ceasefire in Europe. So what people tend to forget is that Operation Paperclip was much more of a technical exchange program, and technical exchange does not translate into politics. So the idea that we've got a Nazi occupation government or a Zionist occupation government, in both cases, is as ridiculous as saying we have a Catholic occupation government and everything traces back to the Jesuits.
But what about, what was his name? Was it Colonel Smedley Butler, who was hired by a Nazi regime within the United States to stage a coup, and he had 100,000 men or something?
Yes, this is what you're bringing up was the attempt to oust Roosevelt, because Roosevelt was placing America on a very collectivized path. And a lot of people, we have to remember that these economic terms are basically, in a sense, a form of name calling. So when Roosevelt truly, indisputably, was collectivizing an enormous amount of American society, he started various social welfare programs, which is not to argue against the social welfare programs. These are what everyone in Europe and the developed world has done. But when he was doing this to the extreme where he had a card-carrying communist, Henry Wallace, as a vice president, and Henry Wallace was talking about violently collectivizing agriculture in the United States, which would have resulted in mass famine similar to what was going on in the Stalinist regime, then many American corporations began to strike back. And at that point, through the attempted coup that they were trying to establish through Smedley Butler as a figurehead, they essentially forced the Roosevelt administration into compromise. So the coup was not necessarily a failure. You'll notice that none of these men were taken to task. None of them were imprisoned. None of them were executed.
And this is even after Smedley Butler went public and turncoated on them and pointed fingers and named names. Look, these are the fascists that are trying to take over America violently, and they hired me to do it. And then, oh, well, let's just forget about all of that for the rest of time. Douglas Dietrich is my guest from DouglasDietrich.com, and we will be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. You can even join us in the chat room there if you wish to. Just a few minutes away.
Do you experience anxiety on a daily basis? Do you struggle to complete tasks, feel nervous in social settings, or are you losing sleep because of anxiety, worry, or health concerns? Let me tell you about a breakthrough discovery that changed my life. My name is Kirsten, and anxiety plagued me daily. I listened to the wonderful testimonials about RNA drops and decided to use them myself, beginning gradually from just a few drops to the recommended dosage. I'm happy to report that I experienced a significant decrease of anxiety, and that was just the beginning. After you hear the incredible stories at GetMyRNA.com, you can get a free trial-sized bottle valued at $50. Just pay shipping and handling. Again, that's GetMyRNA.com for your free trial-sized bottle today. Nothing is as important as feeling good again. Supplies are limited, so visit GetMyRNA.com right now.
Or see our ad on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. RNA drops.
What would you do if you or someone that you loved was faced with a life-threatening illness? My name is Matthew David Hurtado, co-host of Transcension Radio on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. In 2008, I lost everything because of chronic illness, my home, a bankruptcy, even my marriage. A miracle happened in 2009. I discovered ION, and I was introduced to the RNA drops. Within a few short months, the nightmare of chronic fatigue, Lyme disease, and PTSD was a faded memory. Today, people all over the world have reported incredible testimonials about their transcension process, and I invite you to listen and join us live on air every Saturday at 3 p.m. Central Standard Time. Transcension airs live. You can listen to the archives or tell someone that you love, maybe even the person sitting in your chair right now, that science fiction has become virtual reality at Transcension Radio. Take your power back and join us every Saturday at Transcension Radio.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow, friendships to flourish, with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community, with strength, wisdom, and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio@ymail.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help, so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Come listen to the Routine 10 Report with Suzanne Pozel on American Freedom Radio, airing live on Friday nights, 11 to midnight Central, where the alternative media gets their news.
Wayne rappers, but I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am incredible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible, respectable, professional. Do you read me? It's time to get down to the question of equally will the corruption and the government be the collapse of us. The collapse of us.
Thank you, everybody. Doug Dietrich, my Doug here, my guest today for like two hours and what have you. And it's kind of a bit relaxed and whatnot. So what we want to do is we want to throw open that caller line there for all y'all who may want to ask a specific question of Doug concerning anything really to do with military history involving the United States or whatever. And he also has a lot of other personal areas of interest and intelligence as well. So the number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. 218-339-8525. Call on and the lines are open. All right, now, Doug, we have some persistent questions in the chat room asking to make particular reference with Syria and talk about all of that today. You know what? I know very little about Syria, but what I have heard, it seems very similar to the whole Gaddafi quote-unquote regime. You know how they always use the word regime when they're discussing a government that they don't like? And they use administration for one that they do support, even though the regimes are the ones that are cutting people's taxes and putting government-owned sort of banks and things like that and issuing debt-free currency and providing free healthcare and things like that. Those people are called regimes. But the people who are starting foreign wars and using depleted uranium shells and then causing about a quarter of all Iraqi children to be born horribly deformed with radiation poisoning, they're called administrations.
Yes. No, it's tragic irony in terms of the kind of language that's used. But to get back to the Middle East, since that or Southwest Asia, as it's properly called, as many people are interested in it right now, I think it's important to emphasize that one of the reasons why I brought up these kind of favorite villains of the conspiracy theorists of the alternative information media community to bring up, whether it's Jesuits, whether it's Zionists, whether it is Nazis, everyone who is throwing out some kind of occupation government that is somehow manipulating the American empire tends to miss the most obvious. And the most obvious that truly comes closest to being that would be an SOG or a Saudi occupation government. And how did we get to the point where you had the Saudi regime dictating so much of American foreign policy as a kind of example of this? The head of the Department of State or the U.S. State Department was was former General Colin Powell in the United States. Now, very shortly after his retirement, a very expensive sports car was personally delivered to him by a Saudi prince. And this was on camera in front of the media, and they said that Colin Powell had earned this sports car by everything he had done for the House of Saud as their foreign minister, essentially, even though he wasn't involved with foreign policy per se as the head of the Department of State. He essentially was acknowledged by the House of Saud as far more representing their interests than he did that of the United States. And they were giving him payback for it. And since it was he was retired at the time, they could do this publicly. Nevertheless, I am sure that much was going on where he was illegally receiving bribes. That's what that would be indicative of. And it's disgraceful. And how is it that we got to this point? I mean, let's take a look at what point we're at. The United States is the world's leader in money laundering. About $500 billion a year. That's $500 billion is laundered through the United States in terms of drug money. And that drug money, of
And that's
course,
very conservatively.
Yes.
And that's an old statistic. So it's probably 10 times more than that to start with. And it's probably 100 times that now.
No, Mr. Eastwood is absolutely correct. Keep in mind, I worked for the Department of Defense I retired in 1992. And even though I kept track of certain statistics since that point with some connections that I maintained vicariously, we're talking about my statistics are probably from around a decade ago. So there is no doubt that Mr. Eastwood is absolutely correct. If you ever take a look at that pie graph that they show us in economics classes, you have like basically half of it in the world scale is oil. And the other half is about everything else. But in terms of what they don't teach you is that it's really pie a la mode. There is a big, gloppy, gooey, black budget on top of that pie that of ice cream that is called the narcotics economy. And the narcotics economy is far larger than that of petroleum simply because it's illegal. It makes an enormous amount of money that they otherwise would not have. And during the time of the Vietnam War era, that's what kept us in Indochina. It certainly was not petroleum. There was no oil in Vietnam, but there was the Golden Triangle. And Air Force General Secord.
Yeah. Isn't that what the movie Air America was about with Mel Gibson and Robert Downey Jr.? They were loading up one of their big cargo planes, and they had all these body bags that were full of heroin.
Yes, yes. The Air America, to put this into perspective for the listenership, Air America was the largest civilian airlines on Earth, and that was the CIA agency airlines. You could put Pan Am, TWA, all of the civilian airlines in the world together, and they would come up to a fraction of the Air America fleet. And that entire fleet was dedicated in large part to smuggling in opium to the United States. And they'll tell you, of course, they were bringing in food to Asia, and they'll say ridiculous things like we were bringing in this kind of rice, hard rice that doesn't grow in Asia. And I'm like thinking, gee, what were the Asians eating before the CIA so generously was flying in hard rice from out of the United States deep south? I guess they were eating each other, you know, and thank God the Americans brought them this hard rice so they could finally start to eat. You know, we never ate rice till the Americans came along. You know, that's the
it's the kind of hard rice that you can inject, you know.
Here's the truth of the matter. They were flying in rice, and the reason they flew in food to the Hmong tribes in northern Laos was so that they could free up all their land, and they wouldn't have to grow food anymore. That way they could grow opium. And so all the opium that they grew was processed into high-grade heroin down south in Vientiane, the capital of Laos, and was flown down there by Air America. This was Air Force General Secord of Iran-Contra fame. And in the capital of Laos, Vientiane, there was this huge abandoned Pepsi-Cola bottling facility. And that's where they got the term, it's the Pepsi generation. They flew it back to the United States. I'm not joking. And if you ever take a look at that movie Pulp Fiction, there is actually a scene where two drug dealers are comparing the quality of their heroin. And that's where they get the term, it's pure as China White. And one of them says to the other, I'll give you the Pepsi Challenge. That's where that comes from, is because of that big processing facility in Vientiane, the capital of southern Laos. Well, where all the money back then was, of course, laundered through Nugen Hand Bank in Australia, Nugen-Hand, like the human hand. And Nugen Hand was the BCCI of its day. And they would launder about $1 billion a year. And in those days, that was real money, probably the equivalent to almost $1 trillion a year in this day and age. And, of course, that bank no longer exists. Like BCCI, it was ultimately closed. And they would basically fly that to the U.S., and that was the age of heroin and hippie love and free love. And later on in the 80s, everything went better with coke. And that's when we got all that working man's drugs coming into the United States. They were flying that up from Central America. And that was the drug of choice for doctors, MDs, the lawyers, attorneys, people who were actually busting their butt for a living, were basically getting themselves flooded in a mountain of snow at that period in American narcotics history. But now,
during the Vietnam War, with all this drug running going on, I heard that a lot of Vietnam veterans came home from war addicted to opium.
Well, hey, I'll tell you something worse than that. There was Master, let me see, he was, I forget what they call, Master Sergeant of the Army, or Sergeant, I don't know if they have the term Sergeant Major anymore, but, and of course there are many Master Sergeants, but the Marine Corps still maintains a Sergeant Major. There is what's known as a Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps. So I do believe it was the Sergeant Major of the United States Army, and his name was Wooldridge. And Wooldridge, W-O-O-L-D-R-I-D-G-E, I believe. Wooldridge was responsible for the EM clubs, or the enlisted men's clubs in Vietnam, which meant that he had to get the hookers all prepared wherever the armies were advancing. He was in charge of the field brothels. That's what that means. And if you're telling the hookers something, you're telling everybody, because any woman who's going to sell her body for a profit is sure as hell going to sell information. And this guy would be setting up these EM clubs in advance of where America's armies were advancing in Vietnam. So he was just telling the enemy with a floodlight exactly where the American troops were going to show up. And because of that, they would always prepare their ambushes based on where Sergeant Major Wooldridge would set up his whorehouses. And so they would wind up killing thousands of Americans on the basis of this guy and his pimping and prostitution. And what this guy would do is he'd take those men and he would gut them and put in all these bags of heroin. So all that was being shipped into the United States through a lot of American bodies, which his ghouls would later dig up. And basically, it wasn't even a process of digging them up, really. It was once they were unloaded at the other end from the planes, they would take the heroin out of their bodies and basically just use them to ship the heroin to the United States, because nobody was going to open up a body bag to look at a dead serviceman's body or cadaver. So they would essentially arrive, and people would say, they'd tell the family it's battle damage. Oh, they'd say, oh, the guy had to have an autopsy done to find out what kind of battle damage was done to him. But they were really using a lot of these men to smuggle heroin. This is a fact. That guy ultimately went to jail. Whoever thinks this is urban legend, I want them to know that Wooldridge is spending the rest of his life in jail for what he did. So he was getting these guys killed, and he was using them to smuggle heroin. That's at the bottom level. At the upper level, where we had was Air Force General Secord of Iran-Contra fame doing what he did. And so because of that, we have this whole connection now with Asia based on narcotics. When America was thrust out of Southeast Asia, they ultimately moved into Southwest Asia. And when they moved into Southwest Asia, we're talking about their opium now is grown in Afghanistan. And it's processed in Pakistan. And so on a good season, 70% to almost 90% of all the world's processed heroin sources out of Pakistan. And so that's why America...
But now, today it's reversed, because, look, America went into there, and then it suddenly became a massive heroin center for the world, you know, 90% of the world's heroin. And now the United States moves into Afghanistan, and now Afghanistan is the 90% producer of the world's heroin today. And it just goes on and on. It seems wherever the United States goes, they're either there for drugs or for some other kind of reason.
Right. Well, just to clarify the nuances of what you've just outlined, this is why it's called AFPAKIA, or the Afghanistan-Pakistan Theater of Operations, is because Afghanistan is where, like the Hmong tribesmen in northern Laos, that's the raw opium poppies. That's what that is. It's the fields. It's the poppy fields of Afghanistan as opposed to the poppy fields of France. And in what they do is they take the poppies down to Pakistan to be processed into high-grade heroin, just like they were doing, taking the opium that the Hmong tribesmen were growing, taking it down to Vientiane Pepsi-Cola abandoned bottling facility and processing into high-grade heroin in the same country. This time you've got two countries involved, neither one of which should exist. Both of them are simply tribal zones. They're tribal shatter belts. They're just regional tribal areas that are given national names for the sake of convenience. But basically in these areas, you have opium raw being grown in one area, processed in another because it's closer to the sea, closer to the ports, then it's shipped out. So, yeah, the processed heroin is still sourcing out of Pakistan, only now the money's being laundered right here in the United States. And if it stopped, think about what would happen to the United States. Our entire economy would collapse. I mean, all that drug money would mean
Well, it's liquid cash. It's liquid cash. You know, that's the most supportive thing you can really have in for an economy is cash physically getting into it and going through it. And if you've got a company on the U.S. stock market, on Wall Street, you don't have to file out transaction receipts if you bring in over $10,000 per pop. And so now these major Wall Street presences like Pepsi, Coca-Cola, etc., have been doing massive deals with foreign drug dealers to launder all their drug money here in exchange for things like, I don't know, like 20 armor-plated Chevy Suburbans and what have you. And the result being that, as we said before, very, very, very conservatively, $500 billion or whatever of drug money being laundered through this U.S. stock market. How many people got a credit card? How many people pay off their credit card when the full balance is due? And how many people pay off your monthly minimum required payment? Okay. In order to suck all that drug money out, it would mean that there wouldn't be any of that available cash for you to spend up and very, very slowly pay back in a large way. It would cut the economy's throat and it would bleed out like a stuck pig. Would you push that button? Would you stop putting the crack in the black communities? Would you stop putting the cocaine up the Wall Street lawyers' noses? Would you stop putting the heroin into the arms of Rudolph Giuliani? No, you wouldn't, because everybody else would suffer.
No, you're absolutely right, Mr. Eastwood. And basically, if the drugs were truly stopped, then the taxes would go up and the mutual funds would go down. And the government checks would cease to go out, not only just to government employees, but to welfare recipients and to people who are on social programs that they need to keep them alive. So in other words, we would all essentially die if the drug money were to stop at this point. As a nation, we would all essentially die. That's how horrible the situation is. And how did we get to this point? I mean, let's look at that. We got 50% of the London stock market is owned by Mideastern nations. Carlyle Group moved to Dubai. Most mutual funds, which I said would go down if the drug money stopped, are invested in Halliburton, which moved its base of operations out of the country to Dubai. And a lot of this is in on the face of it.
Hold on a second. We're coming to break now. Douglas Dietrich is my guest from DouglasDietrich.com with his very, very shiny and bright mind and forehead. We'll be right back after the break on the Billy Eastwood Show.com.
Are chemtrail geoengineering programs changing our weather and destroying our environment? Why in the world are they spraying?
They want to create a storm in the southeast, then they'll start engineering out over the North Pacific. That's where the trailies will be.
Find out why critics are calling Why in the World Are They Spraying the most important film that is revolutionizing the environmental movement. Go to whyintheworldarethespraying.com for more information.
It's just going to get worse until the point where we're not going to be able to grow anything at all unless it's a Monsanto genetically modified abiotic stress resistant. resistant seed.
Why in the world are they spraying? New international version with languages available from around the world. Go to whyintheworldaretheyspraying.com for more information.
It's all about money, and weather is another form of commoditizing, the way the Central Command Group can commoditize another form of our life.
Why in the world are they spraying?
And if you control the weather, you're going to control the planet. It's that simple.
Do you realize every day we are being put under constant stress from wireless radiation? What's worse is that you don't even know that it's happening. It puts as much stress on our body as if we had a constant viral infection, draining our energy and sapping our strength, or just making us irritable and fatigued. These wireless fields are being emitted from computers, microwaves, mobile phones, power lines, and any electrical appliance. Now there is a solution. A group of research engineers in New Zealand have come up with an active shielding device that shields you from wireless radiation at a cellular level. BlueShield comes in three models, a household, portable, and USB that plugs into any computer. The great thing about BlueShield is it is very affordable and guaranteed to last. A one-off purchase will see you being protected for years to come. Visit AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click on the BlueShield banner. BlueShield, brought to you by the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship.
Or be quiet.
Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Your natural organic herbal formula for heart health is Heart and Body Extract.
My name is Van, and I'm 68 years old, and I live in Vermont. In the spring of 2003, I started to have problems with my heart. It felt like my heart was pounding. It made me feel breathless. I tried many, many different things to try to get some help for myself. Nothing did anything.
Heart and Body Extract is very powerful, very effective, and works quickly.
I saw one of Sharon's ads and ordered Heart and Body Extract. I noticed a difference quickly. Within days, the episodes became less frequent, and by a month, I completely vanished.
Usually, you find a 30-day or 60-day guarantee. Heart and Body Extract comes with a lifetime 100% ironclad money-back guarantee. Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. Call 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract.
Welcome to the world's meeting place. American.
Practically narcotic.
Freedom.
Oh, yes. I like very much.
Radio.
You're an American institution.
American Freedom Radio.
Truth Brigade Radio. Live Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 p.m. Only on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. The truth has just gotten hotter.
I got some so-called friends. Smile right to my face.
Welcome back.
All when my back is turned.
When my back is turned. I sprayed depleted uranium all over the place. Welcome back to my very special guest, the bright and fabulous Douglas Dietrich. And it occurs to me that I'm incredibly annoying to some people. I'm loud, laugh at my own jokes, have an irritating accent, and basically never shut up, always talking about some kind of conspiracy. Sorry, everyone. I mean no offense, but I don't know what it is about me that's just so crazy and stupid that I think that I can just say whatever I want and people will accept it. You know, I don't know why I ever thought that. Stupid. I'm a silly man. We're going to talk about really offensive things and crazy things and what have you all the time. And there's essentially no end to madness. Have you ever noticed that, Douglas? No matter how crazy the things that you've already looked into, there'll always be something crazier just around the corner.
Yeah, none of it really makes any sense, or rather the sense that ultimately one finds has a logic to it that is not your logic or my logic. It's the logic of people who are stark raving mad. And that, unfortunately, is what ran our society to the ground quite some time ago. I was speaking about these companies moving over to Dubai. The reason that's so important is the insanity on the face of that. Now, let me give you kind of an analogy that I gave one time on YouTube, where there was a bunch of amateur dudes who kind of put together some footage of me, and they had this bumper music or background music that just flooded over everything I was saying. So in a sense, I can say what I'm saying now, and people will finally understand what I had said many years ago that got flooded out by some really bad theme music. And that can be found on YouTube. It's been around forever. Douglas Dietrich speaks on the House of Saud. But basically, what had happened in terms of the analogy that I was making was I was comparing what would have happened, say, in the southwest of the United States if we had gone into a meltdown, a kind of social meltdown into anarchy, which is entirely conceivable. And it could have happened even during the Rodney King riots if the American government hadn't stepped in with full military force. Not that I'm justifying that or somehow rationalizing it. But if, say, enough urban decay and enough economic decay takes place where we begin to have the inevitable devolution and balkanization that will occur happen a lot faster than we would hope for. By that I mean we're hoping that it doesn't happen too quickly so that we don't all get engulfed in it. But if it were to happen quickly, if Los Angeles began to break up into ethnic enclaves, if you had Latin Americans and African Americans and European Americans starting to throw bombs at each other and fire off at each other, and you had a revanchist Mexico saying that this land was originally ours, it was stolen by the United States, which historically they could viably argue, and that we're going to start sending troops in to keep the peace. Let's say that you had that kind of situation going down where they literally started now lobbing just radioactive materials at each other. And this is entirely conceivable, and I'm not going to say this in such a way that somebody will learn how to build a bomb overnight, but the most lethal element in the human inventory is probably plutonium. And you can find that in old X-ray machines. And
plutonium is named after Pluto, the Greek god of the underworld.
That's right. And interestingly enough, he was also the god of money, which is where we get the term plutocracy from, or government by money. And so that's interesting that the god of the underworld was also the god of money and its works. But at any rate,
because I think the two are connected in that way.
Somehow, yes, one way or another, yes, there seems to be a connection with them. But in terms of what had happened with plutonium, if somebody were to start, and this could happen in a serious enough social meltdown, somebody could break into hospitals, break down old X-ray machines, get a hold of plutonium, you just stick it in a microwave oven, you basically nuke pretty much a score of city blocks, you know, with a dirty bomb. I mean, this stuff could happen. I'm not saying it in such a way that people could do it easily, so it would take an engineer still to do some work with it. But my point is that if it got to that point where you had radiation blowing down south into Baja and blowing down south into Mexico and the Mexicans threatening to invade, what if in the middle of all that ethnic warfare, threats of invasion and radioactivity, the Japanese said, we're going to move all of our corporate headquarters to Baja, California. And then they reestablished themselves on the Baja Peninsula. Everybody would look at them and say, gee, that's crazy. Those guys are nuts. Why would they do something like that? Why would they put their entire economy hostage to fortune in an area that is in such a obvious meltdown? Well, that's exactly what the Americans and the British have done with Dubai. If you take a look at Iraq, we've got the federal budget of about $2,770 billion. Think about what I'm saying, hemorrhaging over $500 billion in debt every year just to finance the Iraq war. And that, again, these are fairly old statistics, and they're trying to Vietnamize the Iraq war. They're trying to pull out slowly and leave it in the hands of private corporations and all the rest of that. But the last time I checked the statistics, this had doubled to about $1,000 billion annually to shove money into New Orleans after Katrina. It could only have gotten worse after the Gulf incident with the spilled oil. So we're already flooding money out, hemorrhaging it. The only thing keeping us afloat is the narcotics trade. But all of this money going into Iraq is based on the war in which we have spread that depleted uranium you were singing about. And the depleted uranium, essentially, it doesn't stay in one place. It's dust. It's particulate matter. It is the radiological equivalent of 44,000 Hiroshima-sized atomic weapons going off in Iraq. And this stuff is blown down the Persian Gulf. It's blown into places like Al-Kuwait, where the cancer rates have gone up astronomically, as well as the birth abnormalities and birth defects, just as they have in Al-Iraq itself. And it's happened that way in many of the Middle Eastern states. And don't think it doesn't blow down towards Iraq or towards Dubai. Now, and across the Persian Gulf, you've got this angry Al-Iraq who knows that the Americans are waging a nuclear war. And as a result, Iranian troops who are insurgents into Al-Iraq, before they go back into their nation, they take off all their uniforms and they burn them at the border because they don't want to bring home all those radioactive isotopes. They know what they're dealing with, but American troops roll in it like they're born to do so, because they're told that it's perfectly safe, just like the Americans who used to march into mushroom clouds. But my point,
practically, like practically just lying on a big bed of it, flapping their arms and leg, making depleted uranium angels, like it's fucking Christmas.
Yes, I know. It's hideous. It's hideous. By the way, and this has been proven by genetic testing that was conducted by a Serbian doctor who used to work for the Veterans Administration of the United States. He was of Serbian descent. His name was Dr. Durakovic, and he privately funded chromosomal testing on Gulf War vets from my phase of the Gulf War, which was Operation Desert Storm. These were mostly Army men, and he found out that they had suffered as much radiological cellular damage, chromosomal damage, due to radiation. It was the equivalent as if they had been undergoing chemotherapy all of their adult lives. It was crazy. That's a good deal of Gulf War syndrome is radiation sickness. And that's why so many of them have their teeth rotting, falling out. That's radiation sickness. That's developing gums and boils in their gums, all the rest of that. This is as if they were marching into a mushroom cloud, like the men did after nuclear tests at Yucca Flats. It's equivalent. And
Kind of like the first responders did on 9/11, marching into a massive fracking asbestos cloud.
Yes, no, absolutely. And the point is, you've got all this radiation that is, you've got basically a nuclear war. You've got a nuclear war being waged in Al-Iraq, that whole area, and it's going down south. You've got Iran threatening to invade and restabilize order in the Shiite areas of Iraq and whatnot. So with all of this going down, suddenly you have major corporations like Halliburton and of course, Carlyle Group and all these other banks and whatnot moving over to Dubai. Now, that's crazy. I mean, you can take a look at Iran right across the bay from Dubai, and those people might be crossing those waters any minute. And so what do they have to do to maintain these companies there and their security? They put in carrier groups the USS Enterprise was a part of, which they've only recently recalled to basically salvage. And so you have all of these risks taking place. Now, the Enterprise had, what, 4, 6 nuclear reactors on it? If that thing had gotten taken out, think of all of the radiation that would have plugged up the Persian Gulf and its entry for how many generations? It was an insane maneuver. The whole system is insane. And why do we do this? How did we get to this point where they're doing this? And why? It's because the House of Saud told the Americans that if we're going down, we want you going down. And just like the Tokugawa shogunate used to have all of the daimyo, our samurai warlords, send all of their families as hostages to live in the capital, the House of Saud said, we want your heads of state and economy living here. As a matter of fact, Dick Cheney has an estate in Dubai. They were demanding literal heads of state to move to Dubai, and that we want them hostages to fortune. If we're going down, you're going to be right in front of us. You're our human shields. Your entire corporations, we want them headquartered here so they'll be our economic shield. You'll be vested in protecting us. And how is it they got that kind of power? This is all because of World War II. This is all because of what Roosevelt did with Pearl Harbor. And it sounds like, what's the connection? Well, the connection is that Roosevelt took America off the gold standard. Took America off the gold standard within about 6 or 7 weeks of his inauguration, and basically reclaimed a lot of private coin and numismatic collections. He made it illegal to own gold as private property in the United States. And what happened after that was he invested all of that gold into a centralized banking system. He strengthened the Federal Reserve, and he also, by taking America off the gold standard, gave America, made the American dollar, the United States dollar, a fiat currency, so he could print us out of the Depression. So because he was able to print us out of the Great Depression, and we were the only nation in the world starting in 1933 that wasn't tied down to any gold reserves, it became the de facto global currency. So when it became the de facto global currency of the world, they basically took that virtue and made it a necessity. And in 1940, a new monetary...
Oh, well, we are just coming up to break now, and it occurs to me that a lot of people are now saying that the end of the U.S. reserve currency, which is a thing that gives you your cheap oil, cheap resources, and actually an actual purchasing power, might soon be scrapped and would basically destroy every economic aspect of Americans' lives. We'll be right back with Douglas Dietrich for the second hour.
Now you and your family and friends can enjoy the cleanest, most delicious, and healthy drinking water anytime, even while traveling, camping, at sporting events, or in emergency situations. The Berkeleyite removes bacteria, cysts, parasites, and harmful chemicals to below detectable levels. It also reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury, while leaving in the beneficial and nutritional minerals your body needs. Berkeleyite is so powerful, it can even purify raw, untreated water from remote lakes and streams. And the optional PF2 filters even remove fluoride. The Berkeleyite LED, with its rechargeable lighting system, can be used as a nightlight or a camp light. To view or purchase your Berkey water system and replacement filters, please visit American Freedom Radio's website at AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey banner. Once again, that's AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and click the Berkey Water banner. Not yet available in Iowa.
What would you do if you or someone that you love was faced with a life-threatening illness? My name is Matthew David Hurtado, co-host of Transcension Radio on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. In 2008, I lost everything because of chronic illness, my home, a bankruptcy, even my marriage. A miracle happened in 2009. I discovered ION, and I was introduced to the RNA drops. Within a few short months, the nightmare of chronic fatigue, Lyme's disease, and PTSD was a faded memory. Today, people all over the world have reported incredible testimonials about their transcension process, and I invite you to listen and join us live on air every Saturday at 3 p.m. Central Standard Time. Transcension airs live. You can listen to the archives or tell someone that you love, maybe even the person sitting in your chair right now, that science fiction has become virtual reality at Transcension Radio. Take your power back and join us every Saturday at Transcension Radio.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio and service to the community with strength, wisdom, and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio@ymail.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
No rules. No rules. No taboo topics. No taboo topics. No fear of doom. No fear of doom. We are. We are. American Freedom Radio. American Freedom Radio.
It is now hour number 2 of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go freaking nuts. My very special guest is Douglas Dietrich from DouglasDietrich.com. That's Dietrich with a ch on the end, the ch and whatnot, .com. Welcome back. We're talking about the Middle East and how it essentially has an enormous amount of control over the West. And you know what occurs to me? Globalization and interdependence. This is the way the world has been moving for a very, very long time. Centralization of control, interdependence. In other words, it takes away freedom and independence, and it just keeps getting worse and worse progressively. Have you noticed how each war serves as a single stepping stone towards a greater tyrannical global government?
Well, a lot of people have concluded that, Mr. Eastwood, but I think that those days are coming to an end. We're really headed towards a big crash in terms of a one-world government is functionally impossible because there's simply too much of a disparity in cultures. And what we are indeed heading towards is a new dark age. And like the last dark age, it will be a dark age of religious warfare. And that should hopefully be the subject of another show of ours to discuss that. But in the meantime, in terms of what we have is exactly, as you say, a fragile interdependence. And this fragile interdependence was based on, as you said, the last series of wars, which led towards an American empire. And we're not heading towards a global government per se. It is simply an American empire or a Pax Americana, a piece of the Americas that governs the world, and it is something that cannot last. First off,
can I say something here? Because you talked about how global governance is impossible because of the disparities and the differences in the cultures. You can go to almost any country in the world now and get McDonald's the same that tastes exactly the same as any other place. You get all the American TV shows here over in New Zealand. The cultural influence is, in fact, so strong from America over New Zealand is that when our biggest singers, like we've got this band called Crowded House and another guy called Dave Dobbin, they're sort of like the anthem singers of New Zealand, and they sing with American accents. And there was even an article that came out in the mainstream news about it. So what we're talking about is essentially a American cultural domination through media of other cultures, which essentially changes those cultures into something far more Americanized and easier to amalgamate into a global dictatorship.
Yeah, well, that's just not happening. What you're noticing is in areas where people can actually travel to, and that's not really the majority of a lot of the world. The majority of a lot of the world lives in poverty. Now, again, these are old statistics. These are statistics from literally about a decade or more ago. But I can tell you that at that period in time, going back to the 90s, as a matter of fact, when I was traveling all over the world and I was doing private security enforcement and mercenary contracts, the first thing that I found out the hard way was that over half the world's population, which is at that point it was around 3 billion people on Earth, had never, ever in their entire lives ever transmitted or received a telephone call. Half of the world's population had never seen a telephone. And the number of people who were on a computer was just infinitesimally small compared to that. So the whole idea that was being pumped in the 90s about the global village, the electronic village, it was absurd. It was a chimera. And in terms of what I had seen in a great deal of the world was this kind of, shall we say, assimilation that many people were concerned about was the farthest thing on earth from anyone's worry, that no one needs to worry about being Americanized other than people who are really seeking it. You get that in major cities around the world. Sure, in major cities around the world you get it. Where I was at, we're talking about 1991 when I was on a contract, there was nothing less than maybe about 15,000 members of the Dinka tribe that had been taken into Somalia to be sold into slavery. And this was going on in open markets. And this is nothing compared to what happens in the United States. The word wheel did not exist in East Africa until something like the 1950s when they first saw a wheel. There's so many areas of the world that are on such a different paradigm. Americans can't even conceive of their reality. The emperor of the Central African Republic, he was Emperor Bokassa, he basically was ran the economy of Central Africa. So he had his own factories making school uniforms. Now, families were too poor to buy these school uniforms, so he lined all of their kids up and machine gunned them personally and killed hundreds of them. This is the world that the rest of the world contends with. This is their reality. This has nothing to do with the kind of world that Americans live in. When I went into Kinshasa, the capital of Uganda at that time, there was an enormous statue of Adolf Hitler in the city square. This is not the reality of the rest of the world. And they found out my last name, Dietrich, was Germanic. And after that, my money was no good anymore. They gave me everything for free. And of course, I told them, well, why do you love the German people so much? And they said, well, you know, we love Germans because they are white people who eat white people. And I said, what do you mean? Well, they used to be a British colony. And because of that, they suffered terribly under the British. They had an enormous hatred for British colonialism, and they viewed the Nazis as tremendous liberators. And the Deutsche Afrika Korps was
I'm sorry. It's funny that we start talking about Uganda here because I just saw a movie yesterday called The Last King of Scotland, and yes. It shows it was an incredible film about this this doctor who comes from Scotland and goes to Uganda and starts volunteering at this little nice hut, taking care of kids and what have you. And the dictator of Uganda at the time, who just led a successful military really charismatic guy, happy, smiles, riling up the crowd, that kind of thing. It has a crash and damages his hand. And so they pull over this doctor with guns and say, come back and treat the president. And then the president hires this young doctor and he calls him his personal aide and what have you. And you're my most trusted advisor. And he's just a brutal, murdering, psychopathic, paranoid freak, essentially, who's killing people left, right, and center. The guy slept with his wife, and what he did is he got her arms and her legs cut off and then sewed with a needle and thread her amputated legs into her arm sockets and her amputated arms into her leg sockets.
kind of thing, because his wife had cheated on him, and just total psycho type thing. It was a really, really sick movie. I had no idea what I was getting into when I sat down to watch it. And it occurred to me that a large portion of that film was actually dedicated to the British and commenting about British rule. Who put this dictator in there? The British. And who were the people who were conspiring against him, and half the reason why he was paranoid for the time there, because they were trying to overthrow him? The British. Isn't it interesting how even after a country gains independence from the British, they're still there, they're still in control, and their leaders are still reacting as though they're still in control?
Right. Yeah, that's the same as with what happened with India after the partition. We had enormous problems, and the man that you're speaking of is Idi Amin Dada, and Idi Amin Dada was the dictator who killed about 500,000 of his people, and he is viewed as probably the best leader that Uganda ever had because he killed so few compared to the men who came after him. So Idi Amin Dada, as grotesque and as sociopathic, as psychotic as he was considered probably the most benevolent of all of their rulers. That afterwards, the reason that the propaganda films, I have no doubt that there are elements of truth to everything that you speak of. That because Africa operates on a totally different paradigm of reality. This is the point that I'm making about the idea of assimilation into an American cultural spectrum is beyond absurd. For the majority of the world does not think like Americans at all, will never think that like Americans. And Americans live in a world that was based on a very short period of enormous wealth that is no longer with us. And it's only now that Americans are beginning to appreciate the fact that the rest of the world is not thinking the way they thought that they thought. And Americans no longer think like that, because most of Americans now are in danger of homelessness and poverty. I mean, they're underwater with their credit card debt, which we've all spoken of as kept afloat by the drug money. But with Idi Amin Dada, he was the man who had built that statue of Adolf Hitler. I don't know if it's still there, but the fact remains that for the majority of Africans who were there, they used to watch genuine footage of the Holocaust, not just movies like Schindler's List, genuine footage from the Holocaust, and they would think it was the greatest thing in the world, because everything that they saw behind all that barbed wire in Konzenslagen or Totenslagen, in concentration camps or death camps, were bleach white faces. To them, it didn't matter that these were all Jews and Gypsies and Slavs and all of these various other homosexuals, political dissidents. To them, all they see are the Germans are killing all these white people who they view as their oppressors. And the fact remains that German relations with colored nations in the Third Reich were actually quite magnanimous, because Adolf Hitler was very pragmatic, and his policies towards Asia, his allies were predominantly Asian, many North African nations through Mussolini. There are no blacks or Hispanics or Asians in concentration or death camps. And because of this reason, to the rest of the world, which is the absolute majority at this point, the colored world, the Nazis look like the heroes. It's a totally alien mentality from what the Americans have got. The Americans have no idea what they're contending with when they step outside of their boundaries of this Anglo-American bubble that they've created. How was that bubble created? Part of it had to do with that new monetary order that I was talking about. When the American dollar became the fiat currency, the de facto global currency, what happened was they made a necessity out of that virtue, and a new monetary order divided the world in 1940, known as the Bretton Woods Monetary Agreement System. And that's named after the location where the meetings and the agreements were drawn up, and that was Bretton Woods, New Hampshire, United States. And what this did was it took the soft ruble of the Soviet Empire, which was incontrovertible, out of that hermit kingdom because of its collectivist economy, and it took the British Empire's money, the French Empire's money, the Dutch Empire's money, basically all of the world's economies except for those that were members of the Axis nations, and it made them all part of the world economy by pegging them to the U.S. dollar. which wasn't pegged down to anything. It was a wash in liquidity, so it dominated the world market, but it shut out the Axis powers, and they were not part of that system. Now, what happened was during the ceasefire processes of the Second World War, when all of the hostilities were drawing down in Europe in February of 1945, February 14th, as a matter of fact, so the Ides of February, what happened was that on the Great Bitter Lake of Egypt, between the locks of the Suez Canal, Roosevelt was dying. And at that point, he had basically been approached by geophysicists in the United States. And because of his global war, which he had waged against basically the Europeans and the Asians, he had expanded in support of his allies, which, keep in mind, to put this into perspective for you, the Soviet Union had no technological means to access its enormous gas reserves, its enormous petroleum reserves. It had no means to access that during wartime technologically. It didn't have that level of development, nor did the British have the North Sea oil. The Norwegians didn't have that. All of this seabed oil that we have access to now was inaccessible in the Second World War. So where did everyone get their oil? They got it from the United States. The United States was the Saudi Arabia of the world. And as a matter of fact, before the U.S. cut off all oil supplies to Japan, Japan had gotten 95% of its petroleum from the United States. They had all that sweet, light crude just bubbling up to the surface. So the United States cut it off to Japan. It used oil as a weapon, and then it used it to start World War II as a global war. Then it used it to float its allies. Every single drop of oil that the British, the French, the Chinese, the Russians had was from the U.S. It was 7 billion barrels. 7 billion barrels of oil were used to basically feed the ravenous appetites of all of its allied imperial, shall we say, United National Front, because they were all underneath the United Nations umbrella, which had been established at the Presidio of San Francisco, where I had worked, January 1st of 1942. Now, 95% of the U.S.'s own proven reserves were gone. So by February 14th of 1945, geophysicists, and this was before any concept of abiotic oil was ever developed or brought up to the awareness. Nobody knew about this concept of abiotic oil. So the geophysicists came up to President Roosevelt and they said, "Mr. President, you've used 95% of our proven reserves. We have nothing left except Texas. Texas will be our major source of oil until it reaches its peak of output in 1971, at which point America is going to crash completely, irrevocably. We are not going to be able to hold up an industrial economy. We will deindustrialize come 1971. And so he said, "Well, I've got to get Saudi Arabia out from under British rule and buy it out from under the British." So he went to Saudi Arabia, and on that Great Bitter Lake, he met with King Ibn Saud of the House of Saud. And King Ibn Saud knew he had President Roosevelt by the balls. And he brought onto the USS Quincy, where President Roosevelt turned the USS Quincy into like a floating White House. He came over to meet the king, as opposed to the king coming to the United States to meet him, even though he was handicapped. He was in a wheelchair. They had to convert the middle smokestack of the USS Quincy into a wheelchair elevator to bring him up to the deck. He was dying, and he had to go over to see the king because the king of the House of Saud said, "I'm not going to come to the United States to see you." And when he came over there, the king of the House of Saud brought onto the deck his astrologer and an entire flock of sheep, and he said, "Mr. Roosevelt, these sheep, by the way, this photograph of all these sheep on the USS Quincy on the deck is in the National Archives. People can access this in the National Archives, all these sheep on the deck with the King of the House of Saud bringing these onto these American ships in the Great Bitter Lake." And the King of the House of Saud said, "Mr. Roosevelt, these sheep are for your servicemen to copulate with so they do not defile our pure Muslim women." And Roosevelt
smiled. Yeah. Oh, my God. That's an interesting story. All right, Douglas Dietrich, ladies and gentlemen, call on in, 218-339-8525. In fact, I know nobody's going to call in because the feed's actually down, and this will be recorded and accessible on the archives later. We'll see you after the break.
Do you experience anxiety on a daily basis? Do you struggle to complete tasks, feel nervous in social settings, or are you losing sleep because of anxiety, worry, or health concerns? Let me tell you about a breakthrough discovery that changed my life. My name is Kirsten, and anxiety plagued me daily. I listened to the wonderful testimonials about RNA drops and decided to use them myself, beginning gradually from just a few drops to the recommended dosage. I'm happy to report that I experienced a significant decrease of anxiety, and that was just the beginning. After you hear the incredible stories at GetMyRNA.com, you can get a free trial-sized bottle valued at $50. Just pay shipping and handling. Again, that's GetMyRNA.com for your free trial-sized bottle today. Nothing is as important as feeling good again. Supplies are limited, so visit GetMyRNA.com right now.
Or see our ad on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. RNA drops.
Do you realize every day we are being put under constant stress from wireless radiation? What's worse is that you don't even know that it's happening. It puts as much stress on our body as if we had a constant viral infection, draining our energy and sapping our strength, or just making us irritable and fatigued. These wireless fields are being emitted from computers, microwaves, mobile phones, power lines, and any electrical appliance. Now there is a solution. A group of research engineers in New Zealand have come up with an active shielding device that shields you from wireless radiation at a cellular level. BlueShield comes in three models: a household, portable, and USB that plugs into any computer. The great thing about BlueShield is it is very affordable and guaranteed to last. A one-off purchase will see you being protected for years to come. Visit AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click on the BlueShield banner. BlueShield, brought to you by the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship.
Or be quiet.
Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship.
You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth.
You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Your natural organic herbal formula for heart health is Heart and Body Extract.
My name is Stan, and I'm 68 years old, and I live in Vermont. In the spring of 2003, I started to have problems with my heart. It felt like my heart was pounding. It made me feel breathless. I tried many, many different things to try to get some help for myself. Nothing did anything.
Heart and Body Extract is very powerful, very effective, and works quickly.
I saw one of Sharon's ads and ordered Heart and Body Extract. I noticed a difference quickly, within days. The episodes became less frequent, and by a month, I completely vanished.
Usually, you find a 30-day or 60-day guarantee. Heart and Body Extract comes with a lifetime 100% ironclad money-back guarantee. Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. Call 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract.
Online, all the time, your gateway to the world. AFR American Freedom Radio. Give it to them.
Hi, everybody. I'm Christopher Green. Make sure to tune in to Green Wave Radio every Tuesday and Thursday from 3 to 5 p.m. Central on American Freedom Radio. Hard hitting and in your face, America.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Apologies for those who are attempting to listen live. We're having some form of a problem over at American Freedom Radio that happens once in a blue moon, but we're all recording the streams there and the YouTube clip for here. So Douglas has been kind enough and technologically capable enough, which is usually quite a rarity for him. He's just so onto it today. It's like he's improving. with the webcam and what have you. And he's nice and dolled up and everything like that. He looks kind of like a military Morticia Adams. Fabulous.
You're a horrible man, Mr. Eastwood. That's I know. I've been compared to the General Electric bulb man due to my forehead, so I have to powder that to prevent the glare. Yes, and of course we leave it to Mr. Eastwood to add in all the transgender specificities and all the rest of that. Thank you, Mr. Eastwood.
Is there transgender specificity going on here?
Something with the Morticia Adams. Yes, that's right. That's all I need. Thank you. That's
My bad. I'm sorry, man. I mean, no offense.
No, quite all right. I mean, we'll start talking about your gelled hair and how you look like Tyne, the European comic book character, at some other time. And
I was kind of going for Alfalfa off the Little Rascals.
Right. Right. I can't stand that character either. But at any rate, what we were speaking of was what went on with why is this important, other than the King of the House of Saud basically wiping up the floor with Roosevelt. What was the point of all that? What was concluded? Well, because Franklin Delano Roosevelt at that time, being as desperate as he was, and the King of the House of Saud having him by the throat, basically pegged the U.S. dollar to the output of Saudi oil that day, February 14th, aboard the USS Quincy. And when he did that, the Bretton Woods monetary system was essentially appended in terms of agreement. That meant that the majority of the world's currencies were pegged to the U.S. dollar, the most liquid in the world, and the U.S. dollar in turn, which had been pegged to nothing, was now pegged to the output of Saudi oil, creating the petrol buck. And with the creation of the petrol buck, we had the establishment of what was known as OPEC, the oil producing exportation cartel, which was given an enormous amount of financial and therefore political power over the United States that it otherwise would never have had. And this was what led to the downfall, ultimately, of an empire. What had happened was that later on, in a very real sense, what happened was the U.S. dollar crashed. And this happened during the Nixon administration when, in an attempt to regain American sovereignty, Richard Milhouse Nixon took America off the Bretton Woods Monetary Agreement. Now, you notice all of the misunderstanding and miscommunications that happens in the revision of history when Americans speak of these matters. They usually speak of Nixon taking us off the gold standard. Now, all of that, and I hear economists saying this, and whoever says that is just not operating within a matrix of reality. They're propagandizing to you, they're being disingenuous at the least, or they're lying to you at the worst, because what had happened was indisputably Franklin Delano Roosevelt took the United States off the gold standard, and Richard Milhouse Nixon took us off the Bretton Woods Monetary Agreement. And that was on the 15th of August in 1971, at the time that the geophysicists had told Roosevelt that we would have reached our peak production of fossil fuel oil. And when he did that, they crashed his administration. Otherwise, the entire concept of Watergate leading to an impeachment would be absurd, considering what Watergate was about. We would look at that on this day and age and say, how on earth could anyone even concern themselves with that? That wouldn't even be a blip in the news. And the result was they were taking him out because of what he had done concerning the world economy. It was known as the Nixon shock in those days. It's exactly how it was referenced as. And so in terms of the House of Saud and OPEC, they ultimately struck back during the Carter administration with the oil sanctions and brought America to its knees and collapsed the U.S. dollar. And since that time, the dollar that we've had has been very empty, very much afloat in a kind of limbo. And most of the fixed world currencies are free-floating once again since 1976, when the last vestiges of the Bretton Woods monetary agreement system was essentially disbanded. And we've been in a very different world since that time. And that was, of course, it was simultaneous to the growth of the Asian economies. But what were the Asian economies dependent on? Saudi oil. And this is so important because America gets very little oil from the Middle East and from Saudi Arabia, comparatively speaking. The vast majority of its oil comes from Canada, dirty shale oil that we've got to clean up. A lot of it comes from Mexico. A lot of it comes from Venezuela. A lot of it comes from Nigeria. It gets it from all over the world, comparatively speaking, very little from the House of Saud, and certainly very little at this point from Iraq. We've irradiated Iraq to such an extent that most of its oil-producing regions are literally inaccessible. And it'll take trillions of dollars to irradiate them or detoxify them from the irradiation that they've suffered. As a matter of fact, American truck drivers are paid thousands of dollars a day to drive oil into Al-Iraq from out of Saudi Arabia, because oil in Al-Iraq itself is so inaccessible. We get oil from out of Al-Iraq from one little choke point outside of Basra in the Persian Gulf on this oil platform that is basically in the bay. And that is the source for basically all of the Iraqi oil to the rest of the world. Now, Saddam Hussein was threatening during the Bush Jr. administration to go off the petrol buck, to go off the American dollar and onto the euro and sell oil to China. That's when Bush Jr. said there's weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. That's when they invaded with Operation Iraqi Freedom. That's when we had another dusting of Iraq with depleted uranium. Strategic area denial, sad. Strategic area denial made Iraq inaccessible to the rest of the world in terms of its oil reserves. And by taking that off the market, they helped Saudi oil reestablish itself as the preeminent source of the world's economy, the foundation on which the world's economy was running. Even though America's economy is in the tubes, with the unification of Europe under the European Union, they instantly became the largest economy on Earth, larger than that of the United States. So the only way, with China's economy continuing to grow, with Japan's economy still being enormous, the only way to control China and Japan and Europe from overwhelming the dying, collapsing U.S. economy is by choking off their oil. So that's why the U.S. did what it did in Iraq. That's why it kowtows to the House of Saud. Through the House of Saud, it contains the growth of the rest of the world, or the developed world. They have nothing to offer the rest of the world other than war. There's 195 United Nations recognized nations on Earth. The United States occupies 150 of them. And if you're looking for a one world empire, this is it. But they've got very few people to man that empire. As I said, 2.5 million people in the military and the Department of Defense put together, that's nothing compared to what they would need to truly occupy the world. So they're hanging on by the fingernails. The only way they can maintain their power is through the denial of oil and resources to other economies that would otherwise overwhelm them. So, I mean, that brings us back to Syria and what's going on with the game in Syria, et cetera. And I hope that puts that into some perspective. It's pity that Vinnie Eastwood, his show is, of course, the most technologically plagued because of the controversial subjects that he speaks of. And once again, we are under attack, and the only way anyone will be able to see this is via its YouTube upload and recordings on the Vinnie Eastwood channel. And his show is very similar to mine. Both of us are—they're knocking us off the air every chance they get, so that people can't hear us live. And they're hoping that as many people forget we were even on before the uploads take place. So hopefully, we'll reach enough people through this that otherwise.
Whenever there's a technical difficulty, have you noticed how a lot of people they blame the New World Order and the evildoers instead of their own technical incompetence?
My technical incompetence would be the source for quite a few technical screw-ups, I'm sure. But I've got no control over this one, so I feel that it's legitimate for me to blame some other kind of intervention. I think it's too much of a coincidence that these sort of things happen whenever I'm on a show, any show, not just American Freedom Radio Networks, of course, but almost any show that I'm on, that we get plagued by technical difficulties. How would I say it? It's almost par for the course. But
other than that, going back to something, you know about synchronicity and little psychic things that are happening all the time, you know, a strange coincidence. Well, you were talking about abiotic oil before, and you're also talking about, I think, the Philippines or whatever. And there were two things I was thinking about
just recently is the embargoes and the kind of declaration of war type actions that the United States committed against Japan, notably out of the Philippines. That was the one of the largest hemp growing places in Southeast Asia at the time, and the United States had a massive supply of hemp from there, and that was one of the places that Japan invaded and took control of, which later wound up having a massive campaign in the United States called Hemp for Victory, where they were encouraging American farmers to tear up their corn and other stuff so that they would grow hemp for the war effort. Even George H.W. Bush was shot down in the Pacific once, and his parachute that saved his life was made of hemp, and he came back to the United States to become a prohibitionist. And the other interesting element we were talking about was abiotic oil. I was just thinking to myself this morning about Lindsay Williams. He came on my show maybe a month or two ago. The video on YouTube is called Other Radio Show Hosts Won't Let Me Talk About the Energy Non-Crisis. Other radio show hosts won't let me talk about the energy non-crisis. And he was telling me in explicit detail about abiotic oil and the massive threat that the knowledge of this really poses to the mainstream oil companies as it stands. Because if people realize that oil regenerates and is virtually unlimited, there goes their ability to overprice it and control energy supplies the entire world over, and hence their control of the world itself. He who controls the energy or the food or the water controls the world. It matters not which politicians or money supplies or whatever. It's really about the resources at the end of the day. The false fiat money, paper currency and what have you is simply what allows them to seize control of the relevant resources without any inputs or earning it for that matter.
Right. No, I appreciate your bringing that up. I mean, when we get back to the Philippines, that certainly goes into what I have been talking about with Pearl Harbor and provoking the Japanese into the attack. And the Japanese, of course, had to attack Pearl Harbor out of self-defense. And one of the reasons that they did so was because this had been building up for years. This had been building up since the time of America's first Korean War, which was in basically very shortly after the American Civil War. The American Civil War ended in 1865, and what had happened was in 1866, basically 100 years before I was born, what happened was the United States sent a ship over to Korea. I mean, think about what I'm saying. The Civil War has just ended, the largest, most violent war in American history, causing the most fatalities in terms statistically to its comparative to its population. Internecine conflict is always the worst, always far worse than international conflict in terms of the fatalities that it produces. The Civil War was a railroad war. Every single battle was fought within 20 miles of track, and the Americans basically sent this ship called the USS General Sherman. It takes Korean hostages on the Korean Peninsula, fires on Korean civilians until they got bottled up in the Taedong River, and the entire crew was killed. Now, the Americans later on decided that they're going to avenge the crew of the USS Sherman, and Ed Harriman of Union Pacific Railway makes a deal with the Japanese to help them in their development. Now, as I've said before, the Korean Peninsula and Japan are very close to each other. You can drink a beer on a Korean beach, throw it in the waters, and it'll wash up on a Japanese beach. So a healthy man can swim the distance, and they were going to build a rail link between the Korean Peninsula and Japan. And in order to expedite this, the Americans established, with Japanese permission, a American presence in Japan militarily, and they invaded the Korean Peninsula. And they basically launched a invasion of several hundred Marines and naval infantry and installed a Caucasian dictator named Durham White Stevens. And Durham White Stevens was ultimately assassinated right here in San Francisco in front of the Ferry Building. And when he died, the New York Times eulogy actually said the American dictator of Korea has just been shot. Now, the Americans had also invaded the Philippines, which directly bordered Japan via maritime borders. At that time in history, Taiwan, the nation on which I was born, belonged to Japan. It was an integral part of the archipelago. And right across the straits was the Philippine Islands, 7,100 islands. The Americans went in there, they invaded, they began to slaughter millions of Filipinos. Ultimately, 3 million Muslim Filipinos were slaughtered. And the Japanese had an enormous city in the southern Philippines known as Davao, D-A-V-A-O. And so they were reporting back to Japan what the Americans were doing. As a matter of fact, you can see an example of this kind of subculture in the movie Krakatoa, East of Java. And that was a movie made in the late 60s, early 70s, I believe. And Krakatoa, East of Java shows some Japanese pearl divers who grew up in the city of Davao in the Philippines. Now, they're Filipino inculturated. They look and act like Filipinas. They're even doing these various kind of Filipino dances. I forget the name for them, to my embarrassment. Bali song dance or something like that, using bamboo poles. And they're wearing Filipina clothing, but they're speaking Japanese. And so that movie is not some kind of cultural pastiche. It was based on real history. And the Japanese were reporting what the Americans were doing back home. And the thing I ask you is, how would the Americans feel if the Japanese had established...
We're coming to break. We'll be right back.
Are chemtrail geoengineering programs changing our weather and destroying our environment? Why in the world are they spraying?
They want to create a storm in the southeast, then they'll start engineering out of the North Pacific. That's where the trailies will be.
Find out why critics are calling Why in the World Are They Spraying the most important film that is revolutionizing the environmental movement. Go to whyintheworldarethespraying.com for more information.
It's just going to get worse until the point where we're not going to be able to grow anything at all unless it's a Monsanto genetically modified abiotic stress resistant seed.
Why in the World Are They Spraying? New international version with languages available from around the world. Go to whyintheworldaretheyspraying.com for more information.
It's all about money, and weather is another form of commoditizing, a way the Central Command Group can commoditize another form of our life.
Why in the world are they spraying?
And if you control the weather, you're going to control the planet. It's that simple.
What would you do if you or someone that you love was faced with a life-threatening illness? My name is Matthew David Hurtado, co-host of Transcension Radio on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. In 2008, I lost everything because of chronic illness, my home, a bankruptcy, even my marriage. A miracle happened in 2009. I discovered ION, and I was introduced to the RNA drops. Within a few short months, the nightmare of chronic fatigue, Lyme disease, and PTSD was a faded memory. Today, people all over the world have reported incredible testimonials about their transcension process, and I invite you to listen and join us live on air every Saturday at 3 p.m. Central Standard Time. Transcension airs live. You can listen to the archives or tell someone that you love, maybe even the person sitting in your chair right now, that science fiction has become virtual reality at Transcension Radio. Take your power back and join us every Saturday at Transcension Radio.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom, and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio@ymail.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and enzymes and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your two-month supply, call now, toll-free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
Warning. Warning. American. Warning. American Freedom Radio is habit forming. American Freedom Radio is habit forming. Use the truth carefully.
Revolutionary discovery changes your DNA and restores perfect cells. Listen to Transcension every Saturday at 2 p.m. Central on AmericanFreedomRadio.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Easton Show. Make sure that you tune into the show 5 days a week right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Midday till 2 p.m. from Tuesday through Saturday here in New Zealand. And those may have noticed that I didn't do a Saturday show this weekend because I was out at the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement protest, which is essentially the setup via trade deals of the new corporate governance and of the South Asian Pacific Union, which will eventually be amalgamated into the New World Order. My very special guest is Douglas Dietrich, and also wanted to just mention about that TPPA protest, Matt. I got given this new, I think I might even have a visual display here for you. I got a new camera, a little GoPro, little digital camera thingy, which is on the end of a shoulder mount. And have you ever seen those Red Bull extreme sports sort of things where they've got those little cameras mounted on them with the wingsuits and what have you, you know? It was like that shooting me, except on a protest. It was like extreme adventure protesting, and it looked cool. I was looking at the video going, man, this is cool. And it occurred to me, you know what? I might just be the coolest protester who ever lived.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And you can turn protesting into an adventure sport. And we can start making champions like yourself, whoever can get the most bang out of the protest.
What I'll do is I'll throw a kayak at a police officer or something like that, you know?
Right.
or hang glider over the protest, you know?
Right. Right. No, that'd be cool. That would be, we'll take protesting to whole new levels. I mean, right now, of course, protesting is full of poor people and people who are essentially homeless. We could change all that and get the rich involved by turning it into something exciting for them. That's, I'm afraid of which direction that'll go in, though. That's, if it becomes cool to protest, before you know it, only the rich will be able to afford it.
Yeah, well, you know, there was something that occurred to me as well. I was thinking about asking the crowd a question. How many people at this protest own or used to own a successful business?
There's like
two hands that have gone up. And it's like, well, hold on a second. Is that because most of the people who are running successful businesses don't really have time to protest because they're too busy making money? Ain't most of the people who are working out their 40-hour weeks or plus everything, the reason why they ain't coming to protest is because they're too tired and they've got to continue on with their slave job. Have you noticed? Work is baggage. You know what I'm saying? It's like guilt or hate. It weighs you down and you receive little benefits from it, yet you think it's what's keeping you alive.
Yeah, It's a good way of putting it. And, you know, if we could just get over this food addiction and stop, you know, eating, period, and live off of oxygen, yeah, maybe we'd be free of that work burden that really just, you know, weighs us all down. But I hear you. By the way, my thought before we went to break that I did want to complete, because I'll have to talk a bit about my website and the holiday deal on the DVD soon because of our need to make through the holidays, speaking of work, was that in 1871 was the year that 700 United States Marines and Naval Infantry sailors basically forced trade protectorate status on the Kingdom of Korea by invading the Royal Palace and taking the Korean royal family hostage. And and then in 1898, the Americans invaded the Philippines. And to put this in some perspective for the Americans of today, this wasn't just like the Vietnam War, which was awful enough. This was far worse than most people can imagine, even in this post-Vietnam War era. Basically, the Argonaut, which was a paper which circulated, or a magazine which circulated throughout the United States at the time, stated magazine, they were quite honest. There was very little hypocrisy in those days about how Americans felt about other peoples of the world. They said, "We do not want the Filipinos. We want the Philippines. All of our troubles with our present annexation manner have been caused by the presence in the Philippines of the Filipinos. Were it not for them, the Treaty of Paris would have been an excellent thing." That's where America, of course, picked up the Philippines, 7,100 islands, after defeating the Spanish Empire in one day. The Argonaut went on to continue that the purchase of the archipelago for $20 million would have been cheap. The islands are enormously rich. They abound in dense forests and valuable hardwood timber. They contain mines of precious metals. Their fertile lands will produce immense crops of sugar, rice, and tobacco. Touched by the magic wand of American enterprise and fertilized with American capital, these islands will speedily become rich. But unfortunately, they're infested with Filipinos. And there are millions of them there. And it is feared that their extinction will be slow. Still, every man who believes in developing the islands must admit that it cannot be done successfully while the Filipinos are there. They are indolent. They raise only enough food to live on. They don't care about making money. And they occupy the land, which might better be utilized by the white American. Therefore, the more of them that are killed, the better. It seems harsh, but they must yield before the superior race. And the American Syndicate. What an incredibly apropos name. And how short-sighted, then, to check the Army and its war of extermination against these subhuman savages. Well, a report from the U.S. Army near Manila on February 5th of 1899 reads, "In the path of the Washington Regiment and Battery D of the 6th Artillery, there were 1,008 dead niggers and a great many more wounded. We burned all their houses. I don't know how many men, women, and children those Tennessee boys did kill, but they wouldn't take any prisoners." You know, and it just went on and on. We're talking about, when I'm talking about millions of people dying, obviously, I am not exaggerating. And in this milieu, the Japanese, of course, reported back to their relatives in Japan exactly what the Americans were doing. Now, think of how the Americans would feel if here in North America, the Japanese had invaded Canada, installed a puppet regime with a Japanese dictator in charge of Canada, and then proceeded to invade Mexico and slaughter millions of Mexicans. How would the Americans feel if this were going on at any period of time? If they had any vestige of responsible national identity, they would prepare for war, which is exactly what the Japanese were forced to do in this matrix of American aggression. And this is why I am just appalled at the American perspective of Pearl Harbor as a surprise attack. I've gone into the operational matrix of it before on other programs. I've gone into the immediate economic machinations which led to the strike, the deprivation of oil or petroleum supplies to Japan. Those are all more immediate, but it's obvious that America surrounding Japan with the invasions of sovereign Asian nations, the way that it did, had to lead to some kind of response, or the Japanese would have been criminally negligent. There's no other word for it. So in that in that sense, I hope that puts it into some perspective. Now, what's the difference between that and 9/11? When you take a look at the Kingdom of Hawaii, Hawaii was an occupied sovereign kingdom. The Kingdom of Hawaii was ruled by Queen Liliuokalani. And Queen Liliuokalani was forced to abdicate her throne when the American corporations led by the Dole dynasty of Dole Pineapple fame, from whence the Skion, Senator Robert Dole, emerged from, who later ran for president. Dole got its money by taking over Hawaii. They lobbied the U.S. government to invade. They set up all of the sugarcane plantations. United States Marines took the Queen of Hawaii and brought her basically as a prisoner of war to Washington, D.C., where she begged for the liberation of her people, and they instead forced her to abdicate her throne, and she had ascended to that throne in 1891. She was forced to abdicate it in 1898, around the same time as the invasion of the Philippines, or around that time, and she died in 1917. She spent a good deal of her life under house arrest, surrounded by American Marine Corps guards. And she had many Japanese house servants, many Japanese affiliates. One of them was Curtis Yaukea, and his name was spelled I-A-U-K-E-A. And Curtis Yaukea was her managing trustee and treasurer of her estate. And he was the acting governor in 1920 of the Hawaiian Islands during the Oahu sugar plantation strike, and he was able to deliver from her a request to the imperial dynasty of the House of Japan, the House of Yamato, that her nation be liberated from American occupation. Now, there goes an aspect of Hawaiian history that most people today are totally unfamiliar with, and when the Japanese attacked, Hawaii was just that, an occupied kingdom. It was not a state of the United States. They were not attacking U.S. territory. They were attacking a U.S. military base in a foreign nation. And Americans today remember that as if they were attacking the U.S. itself. But 9/11, on the other hand, takes place on U.S. soil, and the Americans respond with pretty much a whimper. And why? Because I think at this point, this is the part that puzzles me. Most Americans still find it somewhat hard to believe how far the American government went in the attack on Pearl Harbor to provoke it, and yet most Americans, I think, in general, know that 9/11 was an inside job.
Yeah, I would like to mention that you have DVDs for sale at DouglasDietrich.com, double DVD sets and all of that.
Yeah, for the holiday season, two for the price of one. Please go over there and check it out, and we can get some support from you through this holiday season. Again, DouglasDietrich.com.
Yep, and even Freighter X, I believe, bought a double DVD from you, and he wanted to get you on his show. All right, well, that's the Vinnie Eastwood Show for today, ladies and gentlemen. And bear in mind, I'm also having my own Christmas financial crisis. So if you can please donate to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, go to the homepage, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, and click on the donate button there. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.